Greetings, this is James Gellin with As You Wish Talk Radio, and we're also simulcasting on eSETI Stargate on YouTube, where you can actually go in and interface with the people, and a lot of awesome people in there, and guests and everything else. Past guests come in on a regular basis too, so we never know who's going to be in there. A lot going on right now. I know if I did the news, it would take me forever. All I'm saying is, you know, kudos to the people that are standing up for their rights and not playing into the scamdemic. And hopefully everything works out and we get the world rolling again. And I think it's going to be happening really soon, thanks to the people figuring it out. When I was meditating, I asked the Pleiadians if they were going to intervene and take out some of these people that are just doing severe damage to the planet. And they told us, no, you are. So I guess the people are going to stand up and take care of business. And we're in the middle of that right now. I want to bring Jeff on the show, Jeff Dunphy. And when he introduces himself to the outside world, he refers to himself as a recovering investment banker, having been witness to the greed and corruption that the system propagates. He spent many years teaching at the University of Calgary in business faculty, mergers and acquisitions, and also in engineering faculty technology. In the middle of his business career, Jeff went on a walkabout for approximately 7 years and traveled around the globe to the ancient sacred spots to study the ancient wisdom at the feet of the masters. He's presently a student and teacher of ancient wisdom traditions through his organization, Retooling the World, whose objective is to introduce a sovereign educational system for the new age. So without any further ado, I'll bring Jeff on the show. Welcome to the show, Jeff.
Thank you very much, James. Greatly appreciate the opportunity to sit and chat. Also, I want to thank you dearly for all the work you do. Unbeknownst to the viewers, you've been doing a bunch of work with the students that we have here in Retooling. We've got a current student body of about 55 or 60, and I've sent many of them to do your transpersonal release sessions, and you've changed people's lives. And I'm just very grateful for how good you are at what you do, and I cannot thank you enough. And I also wanted to remind you of the fact that we met in August of last year, and again, serendipitous events, right? I have a place in Scottsdale, and I drive back and forth from Calgary to Scottsdale every month, and it's a 1,500-mile drive, and I'm in Scottsdale last summer, right? And a student calls up and goes, you want tickets to this DOD event in Ventura Beach? And I was just planning on buying a pass to watch. And I said, you're right, I'm there. Hopped in the car and drove to Ventura Beach for 7 hours. Mm-hmm. And walked in the front door. And again, I didn't even know who was going to be there. I knew you were there, and I knew David and Corey were there. And walked in the front door, and who should show up but Sasha Stone, who I spent a month earlier hanging out for 8 hours talking about God, love, and the universe and how the world was changing. It was just one of those serendipitous events.
Yeah, I ran into a lot of people there. I ran into so many people, though, it's like it's hard to remember everybody. You probably have that same thing going on. But I remember energies and faces and things like that. Names, I'm not that good at.
Yeah.
There's so much going on right now. It's just perfect timing for bringing out the work you're doing about introducing people to a whole different educational system. And what's really interesting is a lot of people don't know this about me, but I used to be in commercial real estate and I had my own office and I was doing all that stuff. I was a board of director on the Chamber of Commerce and did everything right, so to speak, you know, that to be a success. And then I went through a lot of what you went through. I just saw how corrupt everything was. And there's no love, there's no service, you know, what I was seeing and, you know, constant just backstabbing and people trying to sue you. And, you know, it was just all about making that buck any way possible. And, you know, it was about killed me. I go, I can't be in this energy anymore. Go ahead.
The same thing happened to me. I mean, I just, I had, well, let me, why don't I back up and I'll sort of wander through how I got into it and then how it evolved. I evolved out of it. from my current circle of people that I deal with and touch, you have a lot of trauma in their early childhood lives, and a lot of trauma manifests itself And I was the antithesis of that. I grew up in a lovely, loving, healthy family. I was kissed goodnight every night of my life. I was told that I was loved every day. I had a great relationship with my parents. My mother was my best friend. And so I was an aspiring athlete. I was, I was paid to play three sports professionally.
Nice.
And that all changed at 16 when my father called and bellowed at 7 in the morning, lots of sevens in this story. Uh-huh. And my mother had fallen ill. Uh-huh. And I just said, I blurted out loud what in fact she had prior to the ambulance even leaving the house. Said she's had a Barry aneurysm, which is a blood vessel blowout in the head. Uh-huh. And I followed the ambulance to the house and from her to the hospital. And from that moment on, I took complete control of the whole event. My father became my son overnight. And it took her 5 days to leave. And in that tragedy was just this huge epiphany where she passed through me. And as you know, they don't talk words, but there was just this complete understanding of, I'm not dead, go and figure it out. And unlike you who go surf and rebirth, go and knock yourself off and then come back into the light. I had to do it with watching and embracing my mother's death. And so that you went through your birth and surf and rebirth in Santa Cruz, didn't you? Is that the first time?
Well, no, I was in actually down in Corona, Little Corona, they call it, right next to what they call the Wedge. And that's where I had the drowning that blew me wide open. And then when I was 5 years old, I had bronchial pneumonia. Was dying, and I kept having Mary appear to me. And all these beings, and I was having conversations with all these beings that supposedly weren't there, they were there for me, but they weren't there for the others. And then that's just been ongoing, the drowning that I had during the body surfing accident. When that happened, that blew me wide open again. And I was back to where I was as a kid, where I actually knew everything. I trusted myself. I was super sensitive. You know, people would say one thing, feel something else, and think something else. And I was getting all the input at the same time. And at that time when that happened, that's when I was doing commercial real estate. And I said, people are patting me on the back and saying one thing and sticking a knife in the back with the other hand, you know. And I was totally aware of all of it. And I just said, this is not good, you know. And I said, I have to get out of here.
Yeah, so unlike you, I didn't have to. Well, I sort of came at it a little slower. Her dying in my arms, I'd walk into bookstores and studied Elizabeth Kubler-Ross, read a bunch of the Edgar Cayce stuff. That's why I have kind of an affinity to David, and found Ramtha, found the White Book, and went, these people, there's something here, there's something really big here. And so I the journey started in that, and also found Yogananda's book, The Autobiography of a Yogi. And I was reading it, I was passing through it, and every one of the names was familiar. Who is it? Babaji just sounds familiar. They're just like old home buddies. Babaji and Lahiri Mahasaya and Sri Yukteswar and Paramahansa Yogananda, all of them just seem to be really familiar. And so when I've been following you for some time, when you make reference to all of this stuff, it's, again, there's just this thread of continuity in a whole bunch of the light bearers in the world that just gives us great, great solace. And so I was groomed as a child the whole time to go into medical school. So I sort of, within a year after my mother left, they accepted me into medical school in England. Mm-hmm. I did very well. I think they tried to propagate a system. It wasn't propagating health, it was propagating dependency.
Yeah.
And I sort of came back to him. I was very disenfranchised with the whole system. And then I came back to Calgary and went into business school. And I happened to work for, I happened to article for my CA while I was going to school full time, articling for my CA at 40 hours a week. And then I was TAing for a finance professor. So I was teaching for him. And he called me up one day and said, I'm in Toronto. I can't come back to Calgary to teach. Can you take the class? And I went, well, sure. I mean, so I was a senior teaching a junior class in university. So I started teaching young And then the dean of the business school rang me up and said, can you come and see me? And I thought, uh-oh, something's wrong.
Yeah.
And he called me in and he said, listen, the professor, who's a investment banker, he has to bow out. He's too busy to do this. Can you take the class for the rest of the semester?
Wow.
And I went, okay. So he just handed me, the professor just handed me his paycheck, which was the equivalent of about $5 an hour.
Yeah.
And so I came back here thinking medicine wasn't the thing. I went into an article for my CA, or my, it was CA then, I think it's now CPA. And again, I just saw this disconnect between paying attention to prosperous, profitable businesses and profiteering. Went into the investment banking business where greed is just stunningly profound. Mm-hmm. And you know, you try to do deals and you'd just see the unbelievable egocentricity of stuff. You had to experience that all kinds of times,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah, it's sad. I'm wondering, you know, I'm glad you're doing these classes, because coming out of that system, there are so many people right now, and especially right now, are seeing the system for what it is. And they're seeing what a fraud, you know, the whole allopathic medicine is. You know, they're seeing what a fraud the politics, what's happening there.
Yeah.
And they're saying that all these things are all about, you know, making money and self-serving, and there's very little service to humanity, or, you know, I call it the hypocritical oath, you know. That one's being honored, not the Hippocratic oath. But, you know, it's just like there's such a transition happening right now, and we're right in the middle of all of it. And I think it's great that a lot of us came through that system. We understand it. And now we're actually ushering in a whole different system, a whole new world.
Yeah.
I know you're doing the same thing, but you got to know the old world to understand, you know, how that.
Yeah,
works.
In fact, that's what we propagate in school. We call the space we work in the Lamasery, and we have a whole bunch of people that we're teaching who knew the old way. We're in the middle of this transition, and we're going to educate them and connect them to their souls effectively.
Uh-huh.
And so they can shepherd in the new system, knowing the egregious sort of compromise that the old system had in it, you know. And in my misspent youth, I taught at the University of Calgary in the business faculty, and I taught completely differently than everybody else, because I was a businessman downtown. So I was a financier for the oil and gas business. But I said, one, I'm your professor. If you want to show up, show up. If you don't, I don't care. That's the first hat. The next hat is I'm your boss. I want to show you what it's like to live in the real world. And which means if you're late, you get fired. And, you know, and then the third is I'm just a sensei. I'm somebody who's like a day, a week, a month, a decade, two decades in front of you. I'll share with you whatever I have to share. Mm-hmm. And I had in all the classes that I taught in both business school and engineering, I had perfect attendance. And in the engineering faculty, there was professors that were brilliant, but they'd have a class of 40 or 50 people where two or three people would show up to class.
Oh, wow.
It was amazing, right? And so the various serendipities, I'm sure you've seen Steve Jobs' convocation speech to Stanford when he says he looks back and connects all the dots of his life. Have you seen that little video?
Yeah.
I was out golfing. I'm a golfer, as you are, I think. And I was out golfing with these two guys who were clearly engineers. And because I've taught engineers my whole life, I knew they were engineers. And in three or four holes, I started to just tweak them a bit and tweak them. And the sixth or seventh hole, they were hitting different golf shots. And, you know, the eighth or ninth hole, one of the guys said, you are a great teacher. Do you want to come and teach in our faculty? He happened to be the dean of the engineering school.
Oh,
and I said, yeah, okay, sure. What do you want me to teach? And he said, listen, there's a course called Technology and Society, and you can teach whatever you want.
Mm-hmm.
I went, what? It's like the dog catching the car, right?
Yeah.
So I literally thought, well, what am I going to teach? And then I was woken up. I was woken up at about between 1 and 2 every night. I got my notepad out, and just got these downloads. And the downloads, I mean, almost the first download was Nikola Tesla. Figure out this guy. This guy's got lots of stuff on the go. Go study him. Get his biography. And then I attribute this to my connection with Kuthumi. But so I just downloaded the entire course. And then when I was interviewing TAs to come and help me, the first TA showed up. He was a PhD student that he was working for people. And I said, do you know anything about Nikola Tesla? And he goes, oh no, he's my childhood hero. I have a 50 page PowerPoint presentation. I said, good, you're going to be part of teaching it about him. And it was just the serendipity of doing all of this stuff. And I flew way in the face of the university system because I sat everybody down and I said, each and every one of you is a genius. And to think otherwise is just ridiculous. Now, some of you have a musical genius. Some of you have a mechanical genius. Some of you have an agronomer, a genius. Some of you, it doesn't matter, but you're all a genius. And it's been hidden from you. And the look on most of their face, James, they just kind of looked at me and went, this guy's nuts, right? And most of them came back and said, nobody's ever talked to us like that, ever. And I used to have rows with the other professors because the objective in the faculty lounge was to try to be the smartest man in the room. How'd the exam go? Well, a class average of 42. And I'd say, well, what went wrong? What did you do wrong? I didn't do anything wrong. They're just a bunch of idiots. And I said, no.
Yeah.
You don't do that. Like, that's just crazy. So we had some interesting conversations, and I still have. In the courses we're teaching, that it's ancient mysteries, it's Plato, it's Pythagoras, it's the stuff that Dwalkul did through Alice Bailey, it's the stuff that Saint Germain did through Godfrey Ray King, and then the whole advent of Douglas Baker, which I'll get into in a minute. So, and I still have engineers coming to the house. I have a lecture theater in the house, and they are constantly. Reminding me that it made a huge difference in referring to them as being a genius. And I think that's where we're going, is connecting to that, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it is so important, that positive reinforcement. This woman, she passed away. She was a TIC minister, a really good friend of mine. And she taught piano. And I watched her play, and she would like channel Mozart and things. She was like tuned into them. And play, and you just get this giddy energy coming. It is hilarious, very powerful. And I watched her, and all of her kids won the top, you know, two or three people, top place, top level. And I watched her teach, and she never told them they did anything wrong. She'd say, try it this way. I'll try this, you know, and she would never, there was no negative reinforcement, all positive reinforcement, and very loving, you know, very lit up. And I watched these kids just flourish, and they'd start out and they go, oh my God, I hope this, you know, person does something. And you see them in there, and next you know, they're playing beautifully. And so there is, you know, the genius in everybody if they have the right teacher, you know, if they have the right person.
Well, and we also, I went walkabout and I met a woman named Dorothy Gates, and she, my wife said one weekend, we're going to a weekend course. And I said, okay. And we sat down and we listen to this course. It was kind of the beginning of NLP stuff, right? And we sat through it, and then we started this stuff called the joy material. Well, the joy material, I find out later, but the joy material was brought to bear by Paul the Venetian. It was given to Iamblichus, like back in the Greek days, and he translated it from Sanskrit, translated it into Greek, and it's famous. I mean, Helena Blavatsky dealt with it, and Dorothy was teaching it, and there was something about it that was so magic, and it's almost as if you listen to this stuff and you go, I remember this stuff. Uh-huh. It's so brilliant, right? And that started, I'm still teaching that 20, 30 years later, and as we start to do this stuff. So you travel around, and that was in the 7-year gap where we traveled all over and learned all this stuff. And then you go into the study mode where you can't read enough. And it seems as if you pick up a book and it reads you. You just start at the beginning and it reads you all the way through. And then in a meditation about About 9 years ago, I got the, you know, the spine of a book hit me right in the middle of the, in the middle of the eyes. And it was Douglas Baker, Jewel in the Lotus. And I thought, whoa, it turns out that Dorothy Gates studied with Douglas Baker. I just called the, I called the college in London and said, what's going on? Well, we've been teaching a correspondence course for since 1973. And I said, what is it? When do I start? Send me the first lesson today. And it just consumed me. I was at that point, I'd extricated myself out of the business world because it was making me sick.
Yeah.
You know, managing $75 billion when you see how the system is so gamed that they come in and they go, yeah, we're going to do a really cool deal with you. And that's the handshake. Mm-hmm. And then gaming the system. So they give you just enough money so you'd have to come back. And then they give you the rest of the money that you knew that they were going to do the whole time. And then they just rape and pillage on that other money. It was just, it was wild. I watched how the Senate and the Congress were paid. I watched how, you know, I just watched the, watched how big money thinks and it games the system. Mm-hmm. And I had to leave. I just had to leave. It made me quite ill. And I'm sure I wouldn't be alive right now had I stayed.
Yeah, it's sad. I mean, I won't, we had a reunion, high school reunion, and I wouldn't quit. They go, why don't you go to your high school reunion? And I said, because I've already seen some of the people there and they're not in very good shape. You know, I don't want to put my mind into that mindset. You know, I'd rather just, because everybody asked me, they said, you know, in interviews, they'll say, so, you know, what happened when you grew up? You know, and I said, I didn't, you know,
didn't. Yeah.
You know, I said, I probably never will. But I'm having too much fun.
One of the challenges that I found in investment banking was I became good friends with clients, and then the whole agenda was to screw the client so you could make a bunch of money off of them. And so I just found incongruous. Like, so incongruous with wanting to serve. Oh, the other, here's a great serve thing that I shared with Robert the other day. In the last 5 or 6 or 8 engineering classes, I'd start the first lecture with, if you could sit at the feet of any master, whether it's Lao Tzu or Buddha or Babaji or Leonardo da Vinci or Michelangelo or any you know, superstar, Nikola Tesla, and ask them one question, what would it be? And then I didn't answer it. And I just, they would go and they would noodle on it and they would brood on it. And I give them my phone number so they could text me. And you get these students going, is it this? And they'd be texting me at 2 and 3 o'clock in the morning. And because I was working at 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning, I'd be texting back saying, no, that's a really good question, but it's not, what is my purpose in life? It was, and they'd go for days. And then finally somebody in class would go, is it, how can I be of service? And the whole class would go, yes. Like everybody knew that was it. And so how can you be of service to your body, your emotions, your mind, your skills, your genius, your parents? It's just a very expansive question. And when Robert and I were talking about that the other day, not a whole lot of people think about that, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I see that same thing. It's, you know, even too, when you're doing this kind of work, there's times when you're just going, what am I doing here? You know, and you know, you get so much flack back, especially if you're really doing the work, you're going to get a lot of flack back. And there's times you want to walk away. And I said, okay, I quit. I needed a break, you know, and I'm going to do something else. And every time I come back, okay, if I could do anything, what would I do? And I started thinking about it. And I said, well, I'd be doing exactly what I'm doing. You know, I'd go back to it again.
Yeah, you know? Exactly. Many years ago, we were given a message by Saint Germain. And that was, if you guys had any idea what you're getting into, you'd drop tools and run away. So that's why we don't show you what you're getting into just yet. We'll meter it out and we'll give you insight into it over time. And you just have to keep at it. And it's a, you know, it's a very interesting time, because one of the things that I've I've been consistently teaching these ancient teachings forever. But there's parts of me where I discover light bearers like you starting to share a bunch of information. I start to investigate stuff in the technology world. I found technologies that technological intelligence avenues that I could go and investigate stuff. And it was like, oh God, like I have to go and actually learn about this stuff, even though you don't want to. And one of the things we talk about in class as well is good people cannot fathom how bad people are.
Oh yeah, exactly, yeah.
And so when you tell them they kick puppies, they go, no way, nobody could kick puppies. And then you say, man, if you can't believe that, we're not going to go anywhere near that. Because yeah, it's just it's too much of a cognitive dissonance, right?
I know there's a lot of people I know that are, their souls, you know, they're more Pleiadian in their soul. And the Pleiadians, most of them are very giddy. They're very loving. They're very giddy. They can't even imagine somebody lying or stealing from them or abusing them, you know, or, you know, it's just not their reality. It's not part of the reality. And they just get beat up down here. They get, I know a lot of people that come in from the Orion system, they went through the reptilian wars and things like that. They're street smart or galaxy smart, I might say. And, you know, and they see what's going on and they know who's who and everything else. And you just see these different people, their natures from their star families, how they react to this. And that's what I see right now. There's a massive planetary liberation going on and people are awakening to those advanced civilizations that they live with in the past. That knowledge is coming forward. And they're really realizing that, this is dysfunctional. It doesn't work anymore and time for something else. And that's, I see this mass awakening right now. Everybody's coming forward going, this just doesn't work for me anymore.
Well, I think one of the things that is blatantly clear in my years of investigation is there've been some unbelievably profound sages, and almost all of them have said, in this time right now, this time of revelation, when the lights start to turn on, we're going to see a bit of an elevation or augmentation in our consciousness vibration. And then they're going to be able to step in a whole new wave of teaching. Like the stuff that has been taught, the stuff that's been taught for that the Theosophical Society started, the Blavatsky started, the DK started, that then went to, and then now we're back to Douglas Baker. He had many near-death experiences. He was in the Second World War, and he had a meeting with DK when he went sort of on a secluded, you know, he took off for 3 years and just hung out and studied. And DK said, you got to go back and go to medical school. And he went, okay. So he went back to medical school at 34.
Yeah.
And got his medical degree. And then he was said, but you're not going to teach medicine. You're going to teach esoteric science. And he said, okay. So, you know, Alice Bailey and Dwal Kool wrote 18 books together. And I think she wrote another 5. Douglas Baker wrote 100 books. Wow. So when this thing happened, I got on the phone and I called London and I said, I want in, what do I have to do? And they started to throw things at me. And I said, great. And I went at it like a man possessed, and there was nothing I could do to stop. And they said it'll take between 2 and 3 years historically. And it took me 8 months. And in that 8 months, I also went back to them and kind of rewrote some of the lessons, readdressed the reading scenarios because they got some of the readings wrong. And I became very, very good friends with Douglas Baker's right-hand man named Dieter Gedeich. And he and I are since like, it's like meeting old brothers, right?
Yeah.
And just a very magic thing. And then Douglas Baker died about a month after I finished the course. And then the people in the college asked me to take over the college, which I wanted to help, but it seemed as if the business operations of the college were such that really what they wanted was for me to bail them out financially rather than for me to carry on the teachings. And so I've embraced these teachings and they're, we trust they're serving a greater good. But I also think, what's your embrace and download about how this new education system and this education for these wise individuals, these sixth root race kids, how's that going to unfold and what have you been told?
Yeah, what I see is basically they've been really pushing universal law and a simplistic version, you know, basically, you know, it's universal peace, brother, sister, love, individual freedom and prosperity for everybody. That's the foundation of it.
Right.
And then, you know, I like the old Cherokee saying, you know, if it isn't good for everyone, it isn't good, you know, and just the basics, get the basics down and hold that to everything that you do. And then really work on that impeccable integrity, you know, where, because our mind will talk us into things that we know in our heart are wrong. And so, you know, I think teach people to drop into the heart and say, what does this feel like? Does this really feel, you know, is it highest and best good for humanity, the earth? Is it empowering the individual? Is it of service? You know, and start really questioning ourselves, because like you and I have both seen a lot of these systems right now, and especially the almost all, you know, I'd say most of the religions, the political system, the business systems, all those systems right now are very detrimental to our health and our well-being and our karma, you know, as well. And so we need a total, you know, retool. I like what you said. We need to retool. Yeah.
Well, in a meditation I had, and this is a bit of a confession, but in a meditation I had when I was in my 20s, I got the title for the book, and the book was Retooling for Our Coming of Age. Now, the book is partially written many, 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 many years later, but kudos on you for writing so many books and getting them out and published.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, it's so funny because I was talking to a guy the other day, and he was telling me these things, and I said, you know, I wrote about that in 1982. He goes, what? He goes, I was born in 87. You know, it was really funny. And I go back and read the book. Everything we're going through right now is in there, you know, and it's kind of funny. And he did. He was reading the book, and he goes, wouldn't you write this? And I said, look at the book. You know, it's kind of hilarious. But, you know, I saw all these events coming a long time ago. And one of my publishers actually, the first books, he took a lot of the stuff out and re-edited it and said, no, this is time dated. You can't put this in here because it's going to make it look bad. You know, if it doesn't happen, you're going to look bad, and they're going to.
Right.
And unfortunately, I allowed him to do that. And I'm sad now because I have the original book and it has the dates and times all these events were going to happen. And, you know, down to the button on some earthquakes and things like that. And two of the big earthquakes, one that hit California, and there's a 7.1 that hit Seattle. And I went on Jim Berkman's site and I told him exactly when and where it would hit and the size. Yeah. And hit, that was registered. But it's really interesting. I've been doing this for so long, and finally I just quit doing it because, you know, everybody gets angry at you if you talk about major changes, especially earth changes. Anything about change, it's going to be a threat to them. And then when it does hit, they go, well, you created it, you know, and blame you for it. You know, so half the people, you think they'd ask, how did you do it? You know, how did you get that information? You'd think that would be the question they ask, but no, it's like, no, you're doing fear porn, you know, or you're doing this or that. So I just kind of got out of it. I just said, I'm not going to go there anymore, but, you know, I see where this whole thing is going and right now, and it's from where it was going. There's been so much awakening and positive energy putting into things and everything else. There was one time where they showed me the vision of the earth turning into a mud ball, and there was a complete pole shift. And the oceans went reeling across the lands, and it was done. It was done deal. And they said, this is where you're headed, you know, and get busy, you know, you know, get busy. And I don't see that happen anymore. I was just asking again, is that still on the books? And they said, no, you know, you're in a different timeline now. You've shifted that.
I also think we one of the things that happens, and I hear it from you and I hear it from others as well, but one of the things that happens is people really completely fabulously underestimate their brilliance and their creative power. And they also give it away so freely and so unwittingly. And if, you know, as we do memes in the Lamasery, obviously. And one of the memes is, if you knew how brilliant you were, you'd bow at your own feet. And I think when you wake people up to that, there's just, people are waiting to hear that message. And I think when you wake people up to that, and you also wake people up to seeing through unfettered eyes, you change the future, because it can't help but change.
Yeah, I agree with that. I know there's a couple things. One, I was meditating once and it was really interesting, and Ezekiel was coming in, and he said, you have no idea what happens on the outskirts of your aura. And our energy fields, how they affect everybody and our consciousness. And we're always beating ourselves up, going, I could be doing more, I should be doing more, we're always doing that. And then he reminded me of how many people the message has gotten out to, going on coast to coast all the time and things like that. Babaji came to me once and he said, stop watering seedlings with a fire hose, So he told me that, I had to hold back on some things and you feed a baby too much milk, it's going to spit up, it's going to.
And that's so true. And I've been accused of that as well. I mean, I think what happens is when you study all these teachings, and then you start to be able to draw from them to see how they're germane 1,000 or 5,000 or 10,000 years later, truths never get old. They are always applicable.
Exactly.
And people need to be reminded of it. And sometimes waking them up is a little harder to do than just nudging them sometimes. And there's also people who don't want to be woken up. They're happy to remain in the dream. That's the blue pill, isn't it?
Oh yeah. I've seen, it's so funny because we've been talking about, all this stuff, the vaccines, all these things that are happening now a long time ago, and telling people, do your research, go see what's in them, look who's behind them and what's their agendas and things like that. We've been, for so long, we've been talking about all this stuff and now it's here. But I noticed this one thing, my brother and I were talking about this, is that there's some people, when you start talking to them and you have all the facts and you have all the evidence in your core, you have everything there, no matter what you have, you look at it and you start telling them this stuff, they go blank. Their eyes just go blank, and all of a sudden you're talking to them and they get this blank look, and then they look down, and then if you keep talking about it, then they go into defensive mode, you really push their buttons, and then you find out they have some personal agenda or some attachment there or whatever that you're threatening. And then that even gets worse, so it's just like, and people in my own family, it's like, I try to get them to operate from impeccable integrity and just say, look, there's karma involved in some of these things. You really want to step away from this and take a look at it.
My wife and I had a file folder that was about 10 inches thick 35 years ago. None of our kids were vaccinated. We had all kinds of testimonials from all kinds of physicians saying, I'm not going to vaccinate my kids. I was an anti-vaxxer for so long ago that it's hilarious. And you're right. Nobody wanted to hear about it because it went against the official narrative, right? And that's...
Yeah, what's the deal? Like, okay, your kids are vaccinated, right? So what's the problem?
Yeah,
why is this a threat? If your vaccines work, why is this a threat? Why are you often angry at somebody that doesn't want to vaccinate their kids?
That's exactly right.
And they go, well, it's going to spread. And I go, well, how's it going to spread if your kids are vaccinated? If you really believe it in the vaccinations, why... What's motivated? There's no logic behind it.
I also think one of the is, again, back to the good people can't wrap their head around how bad people are. And when you start to open the veil and you start to explain to them that there are many organizations who put on a front that is a complete and utter false facade because they have a completely different agenda. And incredulity, like everybody's, there's no way that that could happen. And you go, yes, unfortunately, you have no idea, you know, like the whole medical community, when the Rockefellers wanted to use all their petrochemicals to create health, they said, why? Mother Nature's right here. We just go out in the backyard and we go and get essential oils, or we go and get herbs, and we've got all the remedies. We don't need any of that. So no, go away. And so they went, oh, okay, well, we'll just make it up as we go, and we'll form an institute and put ourselves forward as experts. Some computer expert's putting himself forward as an expert in the health industry right now, aren't they?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I go, where's his degree? You know, it's so funny, but I think a few more pies need to be thrown there. Obviously, not video. But I think these people are being exposed for who they are. Their masks are all coming down. Their real agendas are coming down, especially the eugenics programs they've been involved with and how much damage they've done to other countries and things. That's all coming out. And I really do think it's a matter of time where these people are not going to be able to walk down the street. You know, it's people are waking up fast, and they're getting motivated, and they're fed up, and there's a wave of consciousness and energy coming in that's creating a revolution. You can't stop it. I mean, it's right.
And it's also being done. It's also being done by a whole bunch of divinely inspired individuals who are very vested in changing the world and don't have a fiduciary gun to their head or a fiduciary objective to, I mean, there's a whole bunch of people out here doing this for the greater good. Mm-hmm. And that's a wonderful time. Right. And it's a divine aspect of this time of revelation. The lights get turned on, you know, you're turning the lights on. We're turning the lights on here at Retooling to have people wake up, one, to their genius, but two, to maybe there's a different way to go at this, right?
Yeah, I love these doctors that are coming forward, and they're saying, wait a second, you know, and they're saying, none of this works. Everything we're doing is not working. Here's the facts. Here's the real numbers, you know, and then they're blowing the whistle on all the fudge numbers and everything else that's going on. And, you know, they do have a major pony in this race too, because, you know, they can lose their license, but they're just, you know, to me, I really admire these guys who are putting everything on the line right now to go ahead and expose what's really happening. It's amazing. I really put their stuff out as much as I can whenever one of them comes out and starts talking about it. And is it Judy Mikowicz, or I can't remember her exact name, what she went through? Nobody should have to go through that. And I think she's going to see her light shine, you know, her message getting out to everybody right now. So
it's
Dr. Shiva, all these people coming out. There's another doctor, I can't remember his name.
There's something that I wanted to bounce off you as well. I think there is this omnipresent law called the law of free will, but during these very magic times, this 26,000 year cycle that we call the precession of the equinox, and when the law of acceleration starts to speed up, there is this magic time when our elder brothers, if you will, the beneficent ones, not the badasses, they are more inclined to be helpful. And so when we call out to them, we say, give us a hand, like protect this, allow this to unfold within in alignment. From antiquity, it's always at these periods of time, these great angelic, very advanced beings would show up to be even more helpful than they were, you know, 400 years ago or 500 years ago. Mm-hmm. And is that consistent with what you know and what you've been told?
Yeah, exactly. And they've been following this progression. It's a natural progression. We're going into a highly energized place in space we've never been before. And people call it the galactic wave and all these other things happening. And that's all part of it. They use those energies, and that's when it's ripe for contact and for healing and all these other things. they can come in closer and closer. You know, I'm seeing that on a huge scale right now that we're going through those times. And what I notice is a lot of the people that went through the Orion Wars and all the other stuff are here big time right now. And it's all, they're the ones that are really at the forefront of the planetary liberation. You know, the Orion Council of Light, the Pleiadians are involved in it. And a lot of people that went through those wars really know what it's all about, and they want to clean it up here, clean up the mess here as well, and liberate the people here. So it's going to get really, really interesting.
They've been there, done that, and got the t-shirt, didn't they? Right? I mean, exactly, they're now here to do it again, you know?
Yeah. And they, what's nice is that they have the wisdom, you know, under their belt, because they know how these other forces operate, you know, because they had to deal with them themselves. And so they're lining up with the ground crew or the white hats or things like that. There's a huge, it's just like this giant upside down pyramid. You know, there's all these higher dimensional beings and the conscious energy pressing in right now. And it's a multidimensional event, and it's unstoppable. It's just going to be, you can't stop what's happening. And I saw a thing brought to me to tears. I watched all the people protesting around the world right now and just saying enough, you know, we're not buying this. We want our jobs back. We want to get out of our houses. We want to get moving. And it's worldwide right now. And it just brought me to tears. I go, finally, they're waking up. They're figuring it out. And they're saying the right thing. And they're wise. You know, they know what's going on. You know, they're not sheep, you know, so it's happening.
Well, I think we do the best we can to remind everybody of their sovereign connection to something of a much greater source rather than them being just dumbed down and blindfolded and hypnotized into doing being sheeple, you know, and that's a scary act. But
yeah, exactly.
There's also, it is the time of revelation. It's the time when the lights go up, we empower, we emancipate humanity from this stuff. And it's a very magic time to be alive.
Yeah, the apocalypse, we're in the apocalypse, which is the great uncovering. You know, people think the apocalypse is all this disaster. No, it's a huge awakening and people figuring things out and the mask coming down and seeing everything for what it is. People have been enslaved and persecuted and held in abject poverty for so long that mm-hmm. it just doesn't work anymore. You know, it's not going to work anymore.
There's in the ancient teachings, they talk about what they phrase as the dweller on the threshold. And so part of the dweller on the threshold, we, you know, each one of us individually has it, but when we're graduating out of the human kingdom and into the kingdom of the souls, when we're moving towards ascension, you have to deal with all your past karma. Right.
Yeah.
And that raises itself up. It's the metaphor of devil on the shoulder and the angel on the shoulder, right? And the dweller on the threshold of the planet is Hollywood, big money, big politics, big food, big pharma, and mm-hmm. it has to be dealt with, and it has to be sublimated into something bigger. I mean, for want of better words, right? And so each and every one of us, I'm sure you're seeing a bunch of people going booby shooby as well. And many of the students are going through their little sort of dark night of the soul. But we're also seeing the destruction of these things because it can't last. It can't last, this imprisonment of mankind. And so it's a wonderful time, but it's also unpredictable and full of angst and full of waking up in the middle of the night and full of people not understanding exactly what's happening.
Yeah, a lot of people get upset because there's chaos right now. And I said, no, chaos is a good thing. It's a necessary function because you go from one level to the next, you're going to have chaos and then it'll settle down again. And then it's called evolution. And it's part of the evolutionary process. So mm-hmm. I said, don't worry about the chaos. It's actually an evolutionary process. You know, this is so massive. What's coming in is so massive. There's, you know, some people are aware of it, some aren't, but everybody's feeling it. You know, everybody's feeling the change is coming in.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly right. I'm in memory of the lion behind you in your scenario, and we're yeah. we teach esoteric psychology, but we also teach esoteric astrology, and and you know astrology. Laura is a big astrologer as well, but yeah. the retooling is done by I happen to be a double Leo, and part of the double Leo's quest that Douglas Baker wrote about is bring the group together, turn on the fire, and initiate them by this fire. And it's initiating by the fire of their own brilliance and their own divinity. And in order to do that, you burn away a bunch of the old filters, the old nonsense, yeah. the old things that no longer serve you. And it's introducing people to their genius, which, you know, there are a lot of people doing it, and we feel blessed to do it, but man, it's not easy work.
I love that saying where they were talking about, it was an old prophecy. They said, there should come a great one that will not baptize through water, but through fire. And people didn't understand that. And I said, fire is energy. It's consciousness and energy, and it's a transfer of that consciousness and energy. And what's funny, a lot of the old statues you would see, like Jesus holding his hands, you know, in a position like this, and that's fire. That's the fire sign, you know, and a lot of people don't understand why he's holding his hands like that, and it's through fire. But there's a lot of fire coming, a lot of consciousness and energy coming in, and it's all frequency. I always tell people, if you're not frequency specific to what's coming, if you don't rise with it, you know, you're going to take the downward spiral, and that one goes nowhere, you know, so we have to rise with what's happening. It's not optional anymore.
Yeah. Without a doubt. There's some magic stuff going on, and I cannot express enough gratitude for the stuff that you're doing, but also for the path that we've chosen to turn people's lights on. Because in the end, as the saying said, if it's good for everybody, it's good for us. And we've mm-hmm. coined a phrase in the Lamasery that we did years ago, and it's as go we, so go I.
Yeah.
It's all about the whole gig, you know, the whole family, the soul family.
Now they say where we go on, we go all.
You know? And now they're saying where we go on. Yeah, exactly. That's all about.
Yeah, we were talking about it earlier, and we were talking about, you know, all of our personal problems come from the illusion that we're a person, you know, that the belief that we're a person. And what I'm seeing right now is that personal agenda is so rich right now. Everybody has these personal agendas, and a lot of them are not aligned with the universal law. They aren't based on love. And then what was the other one? I was trying to think. That's been coming up really good, big right now. People having personal agendas and trespassing on other people's space, or the higher agenda, the higher, you know, moving out of service into self-service because of personal agenda. That's been coming up a lot. And then what's the other one? I was trying to admit, it'll come to me, but there's two things really playing out right now on a, you know, big level, and people facing their fears. And if they keep trying to run the same program, it's going to come back and bite them, and now it's biting them. The other one is that the defense, you know, only the ego needs defending, you know, like,
why
can't we just let it go? Let it go and let's look at it. Why do we have to make everybody else wrong? Or this is the way it should be, and people are shooting all over themselves right now.
Sometimes people are losing the forest for the trees, and they can't see that there's all kinds of lovely agendas happening. And no, I mean, we chat about this in class. And why was Harry Potter so successful? It's because everybody kind of fantasizes about being a magician. What we're doing right now, and it has been spoken of, is awakening the magician. Now, the problem is magic, if it's used for the greater good, is white magic. But the same laws, the same everything, used for self-gratification, that's black magic. And we've been ruled by black magicians for eons.
Yeah, oh yeah.
But we can use the same laws and the same connectivity to the direction of those laws when they're mutually beneficial to combat evil. And what happened with Harry Potter? Harry Potter and Voldemort had parts of each other in each other. And so they sort of consumed each other, even knowing that they were part of one another. And again, a neat metaphor. We've got to save the world, but we've also got to then recognize that the saving of the world is we have to deal with our own stuff, and we have to deal with the DF in the world. And so there's some magic stuff happening. I'm delighted to be here at this tumultuous time.
I agree. Yeah, we're hitting the end of the hour, unfortunately, so we'll have to wrap it up. What's the best way for people to get in contact, you know, with you, with the work you're doing and the courses and all of that?
Well, the website is retoolingtheworld.com. We're on Facebook at Retooling the World. And you can reach us at retoolingtheworld@gmail.com. And that's basically what we are. We're up here in Calgary, Alberta. We teach remotely. I had a class down in Scottsdale, and something just said, I'm not going to be able to teach in Scottsdale this spring semester. And so I chose not to teach live, just remotely. It was, again, very interesting happenstance of what's going on here.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, we've had a lot of heads up and rearranged our schedules and everything because of that. We didn't know exactly what was coming. We knew something was coming and things weren't going to happen the way we wanted to. And now that it's unfolded, you know, it's like Captain Hindsight. Now we know what it's all about.
Indeed. Well, and we have a whole bunch of students who are quite interested in possibly participating in some of the stuff that you're offering down there. So we may have an entourage on its way down to visit and to do some work with you.
Awesome. Yeah, I can't wait to connect and reconnect, actually, and work together. Unfortunately, we got to sign off. I got a note from the producer here, Robert.
Yeah, exactly.
So again, thanks everybody for listening. This is James Young with As You Wish Talk Radio, and go to East Eddy Stargate, the official channel, and check that out as well. And so much going on. Stay tuned. We're going to have some great guests coming up in the very near future. And this too shall pass. Keep an open mind, loving heart, and pure intent. Good night.